Please help me to welcome our speaker tonight. Our speaker is Sarah from the Sober Unity Group in Pottsville, PA.
Hi, everybody. My name is Sarah Sender, and I'm a gratefully recovered alcoholic. Thank you very much for inviting me to come here. It's always an honor and a privilege to do so, even though I get really nervous, and, you know, hopefully that's not going to get too much in the way, because, you know, there's still a part of me as an alcoholic that, you know, wants to sound good. You know what I mean? I want to impress other people. I look to human people, you know, human powers, to get that hit, you know, that ego hit that, you know, will kill me as an alcoholic, frankly. You know, I've learned how to live with my ego and try to surrender it, you know, and I'm really hoping that, you know, God will do just that, you know, and that he'll just speak through me so that I don't share the message that I think you want to hear or the one that I want to tell, but really, you know, the truth, and that I share the message that God would have me tell. So in order to do that, I'll stick to the basic guideline of, you know, what we were like, what happened, and what we're like today, which is basically the story of my spiritual awakening. My sober date is July 25th, 1997. I have a sponsor who has a sponsor, and I have the honor and privilege of sponsoring some women. Right now, my home group is the Sober Unity Group of Pottsville, Pennsylvania. This is a very new development for me. It's really interesting. You know, after I, you know, having done my third step and my life being in God's hands, I'm continually amazed at some of the assignments I get. And to end up in my hometown, Pottsville, is just like, whoa, I did not see that coming. But I'll probably get to that part at the end of the story of where, you know, what's happening today in my life. Is this clock right? Can I go by this? Okay. Let's see. I will say that, you know, as at a very young age, I can remember fleeting experiences where I felt safe on planet Earth. You know, the Earth seemed like a wonderful place to be. You all seemed safe. I felt like I fit in. Wasn't aware of myself, you know, just kind of in a spiritual zone. You know, everything was okay. But the truth is I lost that sense very early on. And I'm going to describe a couple of things that happened to me before I drank and early into my drinking career. And the reason why I like to hit upon these points is because when I came into AA, I was absolutely convinced that the reason why I was an alcoholic was because of the things that happened. And that's why I'm going to hit on these stories, because that is absolutely not true. When I came here to Alcoholics Anonymous, I finally found out the truth. And the real reason why I was an alcoholic is because I have a mental obsession and a phenomenon of craving, an allergy to alcohol, and that is why I'm an alcoholic. But when I came to AA, I didn't understand that. I thought I was an alcoholic because of how shitty life was. Excuse me. I'm being recorded, too. Try not to do that. But I really, really believe that. You know, I really believe that. So I'm going to describe to you a couple of things that happened and how my ego reacted to it, and how it found a field day with these events, and how I used these to begin to separate myself from you, from myself, and from God. Of course, I didn't understand that when it was happening. And one of those events was when I was in first grade. I had just got into first grade, and I had to go to Catholic school. And I was just being introduced to prayer for the very first time, like the rosary and stuff like that. And I was told, basically, that if you said these prayers and bad things happened, all you had to do is pray, and good things would happen. At least that's the way I heard it. So, in fact, what happened was, I think this was actually December, so I was in first grade for a couple of months, and one day I was home from school because I was sick with my mom and a brother and sister, and my mom was giving a bath to my youngest sister, and actually two of my sisters, and she had to step out into the linen closet to get some linens. And when that happened, my youngest sister, it was the week before her first birthday, she slipped in the tub, and she banged her head really bad, and my mom was absolutely freaked out and running around, and I remember going into the bedroom with her, and she was trying to give my sister, you know, mouth-to-mouth resuscitation as my grandmother's giving her directions on the phone, and I had never seen death. You know, I'm like, what, 5 years old, 6 years old, first grade, but I intuitively knew something like that was happening, although I didn't have a language for it. I knew how serious the situation was. And my mom said to me, go into the corner and say Hail Marys. And so, you know, I was like, oh, God, you know, I know them. So I went to the corner and I started to pray them. And the next thing I know, my sister and my mom went off in the ambulance. And hours later, they come home and my sister had drowned. She died. Now, I would have sworn to you when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous that anybody would drink if you started out with a, you know, an experience like that when you're being introduced to God. You know, like, you know, that's what made me an alcoholic, you know. It had nothing to do with it, but the way I reacted to it was very, very alcoholic. You know, it was an event that my ego grabbed onto, looked at in a certain way, made decisions about God, you know, and they were based on experience. You know, I mean, the nuns are telling me to pray. I'm trying it, and I'm getting real bad results. So if you want me to be okay with this God, well, guess what? I'm not down with it. You know, I am not down with it. And I literally took it upon myself. It kind of cracks me up because I'm so sort of conservative and shy by nature as a sober woman. But when I was a kid, I was tyrannical. And I truly considered it my responsibility to go to this Catholic school, which I had to do for 12 years, by the way, to go in and to tell them basically that whatever the nuns and priests are telling them is completely not true. And you need to listen to me. And whatever you do, you don't want to serve this God, okay? What you want to do is go out and have a good time. And, you know, I mean, this was my daily mission. This is how I acted as a kid in class. And I was constantly, I mean, the nuns, I mean, you can imagine, the nuns and the priests wanted to, like, wring my neck. You know, I was very verbal. I'd be throwing desks around and screaming and telling the kids that we, you know, need anarchy. And, you know, I mean, this is the kind of kid I was. And just very, very defiant. It's interesting because I'm also, you know, going to be telling you, I mean, 12 years of Catholic school, I'm being taught some spiritual principles. It's not like God and my family isn't trying to help me to understand a couple of things about planet Earth, but I'm completely not getting it. You know, to me, those were things that just, like, good people did or something. Like, people I did not want to roll with, you know. My idea of a good time was to act out in class, after school to go out and smoke cigarettes, to go to the stores, you know, downtown and steal as much as you could possibly fit into your pockets. And, you know, I would go into the mountains and start fires and, you know, I mean, this was a good time, you know, for me. And, you know, I mean, there was seriously something wrong with me before I picked up a drink. Although I did not think so. I mean, I was having truly the time of my life. I loved being God. And there was a certain kind of power that I got from that. I mean, it made me feel good to get the attention from the people I wanted to get attention from as being known as being really brazen, not scared, will do anything. I got off on that stuff, and it made me feel kind of like sane. So I saw myself as being like sane and fun, you know. Anyway, it's now, I'm now in seventh grade, going into seventh grade. Actually, I was in sixth grade. And I always had ideas of, you know, more things that I needed from the outside to be okay inside. I'm always looking for the next thing, the next fun thing. And, you know, ideas, plans, schemes, and designs of what's, you know, life is about. You know, gimme, gimme, gimme. And one of these ideas I had was that one of the problems in my life, in my mind, of course, was that I had to go to Catholic school and wear uniforms, and I couldn't hang with the public kids, and I couldn't hang with older kids. And if I had these things, I'd be okay. So if you knew me, I was very extroverted. If you didn't know me, I was extremely, extremely introverted. But one of the ideas I came up with was that I needed to go to this huge party that was happening up in the mountains in Pottsville. And it was a big keg party that the juniors and seniors were having. And I convinced my best friend that this is the place we needed to be. And she's like, I don't think they're really going to like, you know, having, like, we're not even in seventh grade yet. I'm like, I don't care, dude. We're going. This is where we need to be. These are the people that are partying. These are the people that are having fun. And she, you know, was kind of a crony and followed me along. I get to this party, and there were, like, hundreds and hundreds of people around this mountainside. And I was like, oh, my God, what did I get myself into? And suddenly I was very, very shy, and I had no idea how I was going to work this situation. But, you know, I had that incredible ability where I could just sort of watch what was going on and, like, suddenly become you, You know what I mean? Like, within seconds, the information would be downloaded in my head. Mm-hmm. And I go up, and I go up to that tap, and I'm watching how they're doing, and I'm like, no problem, right? So I go up, you know, acting like I've done this a million times. Of course, I never had. And I noticed with that very first beer that I began to start to experience a sense of ease and comfort. Suddenly, all that noise of how am I going to work this situation, all the shyness, you know, they're going to be so pissed if they find out I'm from, you know, in seventh grade from the Catholic school, all that stuff went away. And the next thing you know, in my mind, everybody really wanted me there. You know what I mean? In my mind, you all now wanted to be my friend. I mean, this is happening so fast, it's incredible. So I was like, damn, you know, I need some more beer, you know. So I keep on drinking more and more beer. That very first night, I drank myself into a blackout. That very first night. Today, I absolutely, truly believe I am truly a real alcoholic. And my story, although it's not the same for every alcoholic, not every alcoholic drinks into a blackout each and every time or at the very beginning. It might happen 10 or 20 years into your drinking. But with my drinking, that's the way it happened. You know, my very first drink, a phenomenon of craving happened, and I could not stop. Not that I wanted to, because anything that was giving me that sense of ease and comfort, I was completely down with. I started to feel that sense of wholeness that I had not felt since I was a very, very young kid. I suddenly, planet Earth made sense. You all made sense. I fit in with you. You all loved me. I mean, it was incredible. And I truly believe it was like, you know, one of my first spiritual awakenings. Other than when I was a kid, when I had that experience. But I drank myself into a blackout, and there were immediately prices that I had to pay. And one was that, you know, people were talking about me. You know, like, who does she think she is? You know what I mean? She should not be running with these people, and we don't want her around, and so on and so forth. But there was, of course, a certain population who kind of liked my moxie. You know what I mean? They kind of liked that I liked living on the edge like that, and they thought it was funny. You know what I mean? They thought it was kind of cool. And so they took me into their circle. And those are the people that I began to run with. And I didn't care that anybody else was having a problem. To me, you guys just did not know how to live. You know, if you were having a problem with me, that was really your problem. And for years, I had an awesome, awesome time. I really did. You know? I mean, there were prices I had to pay, but I was very willing to pay the prices. Absolutely willing. I did not care if my reputation was getting ruined. I really didn't care what you thought about my reputation. You know what I mean? And the people that I was running with were basically paying the same prices, and it was, you know, kind of like the golden years to me. I got into drugs. I'm not going to go much into that, you know, story out of respect for Alcoholics Anonymous, but, you know, they came into my story, like, within a week. And just about every single one you could do within a week, you know. And that's the way I rolled. That's what I did. And I couldn't get enough of them, and I was willing to pay the prices, and life was fabulous. And this is the way it went until I was about 18 years old. And, of course, I had a new plan. Plotso wasn't even close to being hip enough for me. I had to get the hell out of that town. So I was able to, like, schmooze my parents into convincing them that I really need to be in California. That's where I needed to go to college. And even though I was, like, student 198 out of 199, it was a private college, and if you had money, you got in. And that was the situation, and I got into this college. And now I'm 3,000 miles away from all the people that just don't know how to have fun. And I'm finally, you know, in the right environment. And, you know, things were really good that first year of school, but towards the end of the year of finish that year of school altogether, my first freshman year, partying my ever-loving brains out, and now I'm drinking on a daily basis. I'm drugging on a daily basis. It's a lot easier to get away with this now because nobody's breathing down my neck. Nobody's watching me. I'm away from the parents. I had a sister who had struggled all of her life. I'm really honestly not sure to this day whether it was untreated alcoholism or if it really was manic depression, schizophrenia, or something else. But from the time I was 17, she started to go in and out of mental institutions, and she changed completely. Her personality completely, completely changed, and she was tortured. She was absolutely tortured. And So I finished my freshman year of college, and I get a call one day, and I found out that Katie had committed suicide. And I hate to say publicly how I reacted to that, because my sister and I, she had shared my bedroom with me my entire life. We were as close as you could possibly be. But I had now gotten so self-centered, and this is going to take me years in AA to really be able to see this and true serious inventory, to be able to tell myself the truth. I had gotten so self-centered that I was actually rather relieved when she died. You know, and it wasn't that I hated her. It was that, you know, I just couldn't stand watching her suffer anymore. But what pains me so much is that I was so self-centered that I was not able to be there for her. You know, that last year and a half of her life, because I was that self-centered and that self-involved, you know. You all taught me how to heal from that and make amends, you know, in that area of my life too, which is a great miracle, and I'm so grateful for that. But I started to notice after that happened that drinking and drugging just wasn't quite as fun. And of course, you know, I didn't have a problem with any of that stuff. It never crossed my mind I could be having a problem with that, but anybody would have a problem if, you know, their sister drowned and then their sister committed suicide, you know. So I'm starting to think that, you know, these are my problems, and I'm starting to become very, very self-aware. And I'm starting to drink and drug, and now I'm starting to pay prices. And I'm starting to experience incomprehensible demoralization. I don't know where the hell it's coming from. Suddenly my blackouts are not funny. Now I'm waking up with guys I do not know. I mean, players that I had no business running with. You know what I mean? Like, you know, having my college crowd on the one side and, you know, the other crowd on the other side that I'm partying, you know, into blackouts with. And I'm really feeling like, oh, you know, I'd have a blackout, so I wouldn't be able to put together the full events of what went down, but I'd have enough information of, like, clothes that were missing, strange places I'm waking up in, strange people I don't know, to know that this was not cool. This was not cool. You know what I mean? I was really getting kind of scared of it. But, you know, I really thought that I was disturbed inside because of the death of my sister. I always thought that that's what it was. And I also began to think, well, you know what? I better get the hell out of California. California's not cool enough anyway. You know what I mean? This whole thing was a bummer. They're not as much fun as I thought they were. So what I really need is Hawaii. So, because I had gotten, you know, kind of, I started to run with the California surf crowd, and they started to tell me about the big waves and, you know, with the underground surf scenes. And I was like, dude, California waves suck. I mean, I didn't even surf. I was a skier, actually. But, you know, I mean, you know, so suddenly I'm like, that's what I need to do. Yeah, I need to move to the North Shore of Oahu. But I was thinking to myself, now, how am I going to convince my parents that I need to move to Hawaii? They are just not going to co-sign this. So I applied to a good private school in Hawaii. Again, it was not based upon grades. If you had the money, you were getting in, because I did not have impressive grades. And I convinced my parents that they had a great program, you know, a cultural program. In fact, you can take a ship that they own, and you can sail around the world, you know, and like, you know, you really get to learn things, you know. And I don't know why, but they allowed me to do it. So next thing you know, I'm living on the North Shore of Oahu. And it was incredible. You know, there's a story in the back of the big book that actually is attributed to Charles Dickens, where this phase of my life is, it talks about, you know, the best of times and the worst of times. And this is when that was happening. I guess I'm about 18, 19. I'm living on the North Shore of Oahu. Okay, I'm running with a really cool crowd. I mean, they really were. People from all around the world. We're having an amazing time together. And it's been now about 9 months since my sister drowned, and I'm doing everything I can to try to, like, put all my energies into having a great experience in life. You know what I mean? Because life is really scaring me now. And I'm drinking on a daily basis. I'm drugging on a daily basis. And all of a sudden, I get a phone call that my father died. He's 49 years old, and he's playing tennis. He was in great shape, too. It was just incredible. I mean, it was just... Still is very hard for me to believe, because he was an athlete. He was playing tennis, always was an athlete. He had been to the doctor the week before. He was told he was in great shape, and he has a massive heart attack. And this is in, you know, the same year that my sister committed suicide. And now, please keep in mind, this does not make me an alcoholic. Although when I came here, I absolutely would have convinced all of you that anybody would drink and drug the way that I did if you had those sort of things happen. and you'd have a problem with God. That wasn't true at all. You know, I was an alcoholic from the very first drink that I picked up. I was an alcoholic when I was a kid before I picked up the drink, you know. But what happened was, this was the period where I started to try to come up with formulas of how to drink successfully. And I started to realize, I better get away from some of these street drugs. This is getting nasty. I mean, I'm now paying prices, an incomprehensible demoralization. I'm with the crowd I wanted to arrive with. You know what I mean? These are the people I most wanted to impress. And I'm being an absolute idiot. It's the only way I know how to put it when I'm drinking and drugging. You know what I mean? I am not acting right. And I'm even aware of it the next day that this is not the kind of person I want to be. But I'm, you know, I'm thinking, well, so maybe the street drugs. I've got to kind of stop that stuff, you know. Or so now I'm starting to try to just drink, you know, or maybe just drink and smoke a little bit. And, you know, playing all the games. And I was to do that for many years to come. I finally realized, staying and living in Hawaii, that, you know what, I really felt bad that I was so far away from my family and being able to help them, and I felt like I had to get away from there, that I should be with my family. And so I moved back to Pennsylvania. And for years, I was going to play games of how to learn how to drink just right. And, you know, how to get just to that sense of ease and comfort that I once had, that magic drink where everything all was, you know, just right, but I could never hit that mark. I'd always, you know, overshoot the mark, and the depression was getting worse and worse as the years went by. I was able to function in jobs, you know, for periods of time. You know, I'd always have reasons why I had hangovers, and, you know, I mean, excuses why I couldn't work, you know, but I'd always be able to kind of like outsmart them, you know what I mean, and do such an outstanding job when I was patched together enough for that day that they put up with my games for a while. So that also kind of hid my alcoholism from me, because I thought, you know, alcoholics can't work. You know, these are the kind of ideas I had. But I'm now it's very difficult for me to work. The depressions are getting unbelievable. The fear, nonstop. I'm afraid of everything on planet Earth. Absolutely. Everyone, everything. And if I am not drinking or doing something to medicate the pain, I cannot function. And that's all there is to it. So now I'm getting suicidal, because nothing is working anymore. And I'm starting to go into institutions for depression. And I'm convinced, I got the impression somehow, that if I just talked about my problems long enough, they were going to go away. I really thought that. But if you just work with the right therapist and they just get to that magic thing, you'll suddenly be free. You know, so I would be so honest with them about everything but my drinking and drugging, you know what I mean? But all the problems I had, and how basically everything was my mother's fault and God's fault. You know, and I really thought that that was going to be some sort of a magic way to get free. After years of this, and, you know, all my relationships destroyed, still drinking through all of this, I had a therapist, and I really believe that I know this is one of the times that God walked into my life, although I didn't know it when it happened. I had a therapist who was working in conjunction with my psychiatrist, who now had me on a therapy. I always have to say this because it's just so funny. He was doing the best he could. I'm not here to make him wrong. And I was not giving him facts about how I drank or drugged. It just wasn't. So, you know, I mean, he was only working with a dishonest patient that he had, trying to help her the best. He convinced me I had a panic disorder because I was having panic attacks like every 10 minutes. And the only way that my particular panic disorder would be fixed would be through benzodiazepines. So he had me on a formula where I did 3 2-milligram Xanax a day and Ativan as needed. So, you know, and Ativan was needed for any time that I had fear or panic, which was constant, absolutely constant. So I'm, you know, of course, drinking on top of this. I'm no longer doing street drugs. You know, now I'm doing the drugs I'm allowed to have. Now I'm drinking very much like Dr. Bob, because I truly could not function. I could not go out of my house if I didn't have one of these benzos in me. Absolutely could not go out of my home and deal with planet Earth unless I had this medication. And today I know that if it wasn't the benzos, by now I would have been drinking on a daily basis in the morning. I know I would have, but I had found this other solution. Of course, I'm drinking every night, and drinking on top of benzos, not a good idea. I did this formula for like 10 years, 12 years. I'm actually still burned out and kind of like fried in the brain as a result of that little, how long I did that. So I actually still don't really remember how long I did them. But the thing that really sticks out in my mind is that I worked with a therapist in conjunction with this shrink about the problems I was having in my life. And she said something to me that really got my attention. She said, Sarah, she said, I think that your problem, she said, I don't think it's depression, and I don't think that it's anxiety. And she had been working with me for a long time, several years. She said, I think that what your problem is that you're an alcoholic and a drug addict. And she said, and I'll tell you something, and I could get fired, and you know it as well as I do. But I think if you continue to take this medication that this doctor is prescribing you, that I work for, you're going to die. She said, and furthermore, your depression is never going away because alcohol is a depressant. And until you stop drinking, you're never going to get free. I was so suicidal for so long that it was the scariest thing I ever heard, but she really had my attention because I knew her job was in jeopardy. I knew her job was in jeopardy. That she was trying to tell me something and willing to risk her own job to try and help me. And I was like, oh, God, well, what do I do? And she convinced me that I needed to go into detox rehab. I was so scared of the suicidal thinking and the panic disorders, and it was so beaten down. I'm now about 35 years old. I just can't take it anymore, but I was willing to do it. But I really believed, like her, she was not an alcoholic. She was doing the best she could. I believed if I went in and did this detox, that maybe, you know, the depressions were going to go away. The fears were going to go away, you know. That seemed to be what she was telling me. So I went in, and let me just tell you, it was the detox from hell. From hell. Because I was on the benzos for like 10, 12 years, drinking daily since I'm like 18, 17 years old. I'm now 35. I was out of my ever-loving mind. I truly was. But I needed to go through that. And it was in my system for so long that actually I had to go through a couple of detoxes. It was a very erratic time. There were a couple of detoxes, a couple of institutions, in and out of AA a couple of times, and I hardly even remember it. That's the truth of my first experience around AA. My sober date is July 25th, 1997. I'm going to backtrack to about a couple of years before that, so I guess it's around 95, and I'm coming around AA, and I'm like waiting for this miracle to happen. Like, when is this depression and fear going to leave? She told me if I stopped drinking, it was going to go away. But it was getting worse and worse and worse. And, you know, anytime I have a resentment, I'm getting pissed, and I'm leaving AA, and I'm drinking, and I'm playing all kinds of games. And one night, I just really felt like I was done. It was July 25th, 1997, and I came in and I asked a woman if she would help me, and she was willing to help me, which was really unbelievably commendable because the track record I had for 2.5 years in AA, I wasn't looking like a successful sponsee. You know, but she was like, she was willing to work with me. This woman really helped to save my life. She truly did. She gave me the very, very best that she had, and she gave me everything that worked for her. Okay, so I don't in any way mean to sound demeaning or to make this experience bad or wrong, but I'm just going to try to emphasize instead on the experience itself. At this time, I'm living in Philadelphia, in Center City, and a lot of what was happening down there at that time was people would go through the 12 and 12, and they were kind of doing a step a year. And that was what I was doing with this particular woman who worked, it worked very well for her. And I'm doing everything she's telling me to do. Okay, I'm doing everything. You know, I'm involved in the home group. I'm trying to set up chairs, clean up the coffee. You know, I'm working with her once a week. I'm meeting with her once a week. I did my 4-step out of the big book I wrote for a year. following the directions precisely. I became a GSR. I even tried to sponsor some people. And I was completely stark raving mad by year 6. So this is like 6.5, 7 years ago. And, of course, you know, I would hear people say, you know, women with the women, men with the men. You know, you'd never go to a man with your problems or try to get help in AA. But there was this one person that would run around in Philadelphia who originally I really did not like at all. Didn't like at all. He seemed like an AA cop to me. the way I heard him was that you're not doing AA right. You know, he always seemed to be talking about the big book, and I'm like, yada, yada. And he reminded me of those Catholics I couldn't stand. You know what I mean? Very not into this person at all. But it's now 6 years of doing this, and my depression has only gotten worse. It hasn't for my sponsor. She's gotten free. My fears are so incapacitating at times that it was like, you know, people had to drag me out of my house, if I let them in my house, to drag me out. I am so sick now, it's not even funny. So I'm thinking, well, I must have alcoholism and what I call the shit nuts disease. Because apparently it's not depression. Nothing fixes. I didn't know what it was, but I was in so much pain. And I went up to this guy, because I really, really, truly believed I was going to commit suicide. And I was telling my sponsee as I was driving down here that I was really afraid, because I was truly in a real experience of hell. I was living in hell. A complete spiritual blackout, 24/7. It wasn't fear, it was terror. It really was. You know, and to be that suicidal, that's not depression. That's just hell. But, you know, I started to think about, really, you know, how am I going to take myself out? What suicide method should I use? And I had enough of a belief in God, a punishing God. I was really scared to do it, because I was like, if I'm in hell now, and if there really is, the sin thing is real, and if I commit suicide and go to an eternal hell that's possibly worse than this, and I couldn't imagine it. I was so afraid. I was like, oh my God, who can possibly help me? And I remember praying to the God that I hated and hardly believed in, and believed he was punishing. I was like, I've done everything. I've done everything you've asked me to, you know, to do. I've sponsored. I'm a GSR. I'm with my sponsor every week. I'm at step six. And I got this thought that there was one thing I had never done, and that was go up to this guy in Philadelphia and tell him about what was going on with me and ask him how he does things. And let me just tell you something. That was God, because a woman in Philadelphia did not think about going to a man in recovery and asking for help. I don't know where the thought came from other than God. I think I'll do that. And I did that. I found him the next day. And I started to tell him what was going on. God, you know, I'm so depressed. All I want to do is die. That's all I think about. You know, forget the drink or the drug. You know, I mean, what do I need that for? If I know if I do that, I'm stepping into an incomprehensible demoralization. I'm going to end up in Kensington. Because now I'm back on thinking about doing the street drug again, that I knew I was not hip enough to do this drug, not street smart enough to do this drug. I was a dumb woman if I started playing. And I'm telling him about how I'm thinking, and I'm telling him about the suicidal thinking and the fears that just are just nonstop. And I'm really expecting he's going to say, okay, well, you know what? I've been, you know, recovered alcoholic for a long time, and I really do believe that you have alcoholism and the depression, manic depressive, schizoaffective thing, you know? And like, he's going to be the great authority to finally explain it. And he's looking, and he's a big, tall guy, and he's very respectful, and he's listening to me, and I'm telling him about how I can't leave the house, and on and on and on. And finally I said to him, so what is it that I have? And he said, well, I know what you have. I said, wow, what is it? He said, you have untreated alcoholism. I was like, untreated alcohol? I said, dude, I said, I'm a GSR, okay? You can't have untreated alcoholism when you're a GSR. Did you hear nothing? I work with my sponsor every week. I'm at step six. I have a year on my fourth step. This is not a girl who doesn't work the program. So funny. He was the kind of guy that rolled around with his big book. And he has his big book, and he opens it up to page 52. Now, I did go to big book meetings. I did. What I was hearing, God even knows. I have no idea. But the magic of when God decides to step into your life with another alcoholic equipped with a solution. Absolutely unbelievable. He opens the book up to page 52. He says, are you prey to misery and depression? Now, this is after everything I told him. he's probably trying so hard to not laugh out loud, you know. And he's like, you're prey to misery and depression. You know, I'm like, where is he getting this from? Like, yeah. You know, are you full of fear? You know, your emotional nature giving you problems? Problems in your personal relations? I'm like, oh, my God. Yes, yes, yes. You know, I'm answering all these questions, and I can't believe this is in the big book. I can't believe he's reading these questions to me. You know, and he helps me to understand that, you know, I have the bedevilments. which scared me to death. I was like, oh my God, I'm like, yes! That's what this is? I was so scared, you know, and he's just like, it's, you know, look, he got a spiritual malady. And unbelievable things started to happen very, very rapidly as a result of that. And I really did not care that all of AA on planet Earth could have had a problem that I was being sponsored by a man. My life was at stake. And I knew that God had sent that man to me, and I was like, you and me, we're on. And he started to show me how, you know, historically, the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous is, you know, a historical account of what the first 100 or first 40 members of Alcoholics Anonymous did, as well as, you know, the precise directions that they followed in order to recover. And he helped me to see, like on page 156, where Dr. Bob had gone through the work with Bill Wilson, you know, in a very short period of time, like a couple of weeks, all 12 steps. He helped me to understand the reason why I was so insane was that I was at step 6, but I was still 6 steps blocked off from God, you know. Most importantly, he helped me to understand what alcoholism is. I never got it. I just did not get it. And I'm sure this is not Alcoholics Anonymous' fault. I'm sure that there were people in these meetings trying to say this, but I didn't hear it until this time. And he helped me to understand that I had a mind that obsessed, you know, constantly to try to find ease and comfort. It didn't matter how long I was away from a drink. I could never predict when I was going to store it again, once I was stopped. And when I was stopped, I always say that wrong. He helped me to understand that my mind was simply going to obsess to try to find ease and comfort. And that was my experience. That's what my mind would do. And then, of course, when I would pick up the drink, I could never stop because I had that phenomenon of craving, that allergy for abnormal reaction to alcohol. And that had been happening to me since I was 11 years old. There were probably only a dozen times in my entire life that I didn't drink until a blackout. Not that everybody drinks like that, but that's truly the way I drank. Most importantly, he helped me to understand that Alcoholics Anonymous is not here to fix the mind or the body of the alcoholic because they're broken. And that no human power was going to be able to fix them. He helped me to understand that what AA does is it treats the bedevilments, that underlying misery, that, you know, being prey to the misery, the depression, the fears, you know, my relations all destroyed, that is what Alcoholics Anonymous is designed to treat. He also helped me to understand that no human power is going to be able to fix me, including him. He was just another drunk. But all he could do was give me the directions from the Big Book. No opinions, no ego. We were going to follow the directions of the book. And he would share experiences with me of how he got free of this thing. And he said if I followed the directions precisely, you know, that I could have the experience of freedom that he was sharing. And that's exactly what we did. And in a very short period of time, I went through all 12 steps. I didn't make every amends. You know, I started on my 9th step. Was making amends, and I'm practicing 10, 11, and 12. Well, what happened was, I was still very egotistical. Oh my God, was I egotistical still. And I didn't know the flavor of ego yet. You know, I thought I had recovered and that was it. You know, I'm golden now. And what I did was, because I was very upset about my experience as a real alcoholic going through a step a year, and that people, I felt, were getting the impression that they could go through a step a year, that, like, that just wasn't working for me. It was almost killing me. So I went out and said, and I started to preach the Big Book. And only in a way that a Bill Wilson type could. I mean, I was out there. Suddenly, you know, where preachers always, like, turn me off, I was the preacher extraordinaire now. I mean, it was unbelievable. You know, and ego all over the place. And I didn't care. I so did not care. I was going in, and I was going to tell you the truth, okay? Because this is my experience. I mean, it's just unbelievable. The crazy thing is, though, that God was using my character defects. There were a lot of people that was actually attractive to. There were a lot of real alcoholics hearing that going, yeah, makes sense to me, man. I don't want to suffer. I don't want to go through this step of year craziness. You know, so they started asking me to sponsor them. The next thing you know, and this happened, honestly, in about a month and a half, it happened so fast it wasn't funny, I'm starting Big Book meetings in my house in Center City. You could not... There were as many people as in this room were coming into my apartments on Sundays to hear this message. It was an explosion. And we're taking them through. We're taking the sponsees through so quick it's not even funny. And everybody's getting sponsees. Now we've got a posse that's unbelievable. And we're going out into every meeting, everywhere, sharing this message. And it was fun. It was really, really fun. I mean, we couldn't even believe what was going on. The next thing you know, I'm starting one-hour speaker meetings just like this. I got to start the, I don't know if anybody has been to the Philadelphia speakers meeting down in Center City. I got to start that with a couple of my friends. This is about 4 years ago. I remember when the heck, so many things, God's taken me on a journey. Let me just say, it was awesome. It was a wonderful, wonderful time, but I was making mistakes all over the place. But I had, you know, now I'm having successful relationships. I'm getting right with my family. I'm getting peaceful in my head. I'm making amends all over the place, sponsees all over. I'm meeting people in the solution, in the big book, all over the country. I mean, it was incredible. So they were kind of the golden years, you know what I mean? But what I didn't understand, and I'm going to tell you something else here, what happened to me, I don't want to scare anybody, okay? So this is a great message of hope. But my personal experience of my journey, I definitely hit some pain. I definitely hit some pain. This does not mean it's going to happen to you. Okay, this was my story and my experience. For whatever reasons, it's God's business. But I went through, starting about 3 years ago, where every single human power that I had acquired in Alcoholics Anonymous started to be removed. Now, a lot of this, the truth is, there were problems of my own making. I made a lot of bad decisions, and I had prices to pay. You know, I mean, spiritual principles apply no matter how immature you are in your spiritual growth. You know what I mean? But what happened was, I lost the boyfriend that I had been running around with. In this situation, he left with the sponsee and started to parade her around in the meeting that I started. That was a little hard to take, you know. I lost the job. I ended up ultimately just not being able to work things out. You know, doors started to close in Philadelphia, and I had friends outside of the city, a very, very strong sponsor, very active, and he said, why don't you come to York? Run around with me for a while. And so I went up to York for a little bit to see, you know, if I could work things out there, and it just didn't feel right. So by now I have a new sponsor, and I said to him, like, I don't know, Steve, I just don't feel like it's happening for me here. And for whatever reasons, I'm having, like, these visions, literally, in my meditations, of being on the coast of New Jersey. And he said, I don't know if they're direction or not, but go. And if the door's open, it's probably where you're supposed to be. And if it's not, come back. We'll figure things out. I went up. I got a great job. Tons of sponsees. Got very involved in the Born Again group. There is a solution. That was my home group. Had a great, fantastic time, and I really felt like things were starting over. The company I'm with downsizes. I lose my job. My car gets destroyed by a drunk driver who had stolen the car, didn't have a license, so I had no compensation for my car. So now I've lost the boyfriend. I've lost the hometown. I've lost a lot of sponsees and my people. You know what I mean? I'm starting in a new place. I don't know them real well, and I've now lost my job. I've lost my car. And now my back goes out. And when I mean my back goes out, like I need to beat the band. My disc literally exploded in my body to the size of a hamburger. I was terrified. I'm doing all the things I'm supposed to be doing. I'm sponsoring people. I'm sticking close to my sponsor. Dude, I'm sticking close to my sponsor. I needed direction. You know, I'm praying. And I am scared like I can't even explain. And there was a doctor who looked at my back and said, look, what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to take out your discs, okay, and we're going to have to put in titanium rods and possibly a basket around you. And I'm like, you got to be freaking kidding me. Now, I'm an alcoholic, okay, so immediately you can imagine my reaction. I'm seeing myself paralyzed now. You know what I mean? I'm now paralyzed. Going around and helping God's kids, that's all I've been trying to do, and he's taking everything from me. And, you know, I mean, I cannot even tell you how insane I was during this period. But what happened was I told a member of mine in the Barnegat group what was going on, and I said, I can't believe this. If the doctor makes a mistake, I could be facing paralysis. Like, what is God doing in my life? You know, why is this, what is happening? And nobody really could answer that question. And I'm now talking to a woman that I actually found on XA Speakers, Valerie from Richmond, Virginia. And I'm telling her what's going on. And, you know, that they're talking about doing the surgery of removing putting in the titanium rods and stuff. And she said to me, Sarah, she said, there's something I really don't think you're understanding yet. She said, you did your third step, and your life is in God's hands. He is choosing the outcome. You are one of his messengers, and if you need to experience this, don't ask why. Ask what's within your power to do. He is doing something, but you can trust him. And let me tell you something. I felt like I was talking to Moses. I did. I heard her. And I was like, oh my God. I had no insurance. I had no power. I didn't know how to choose a surgeon. I had no power to, like, buy a good surgeon. I had nothing. I was completely powerless. No ability to manage my life. And while I could hardly move, I got down on my knees that night. And let me tell you something. I had my first, truest, realest experience of the third step. I completely let go. And I said, God, whatever it is, I can't fight you. You are too powerful. I don't know what you're doing. You got my life. If you need to be paralyzed for some crazy mission to help another drunk, oh well. But you've got to get me out of this insanity. I cannot live in this state of hell. I can't stay sober like this. The next day, I tell my friend Yax from Barnegat what's going on. He goes, Sarah, he said, I'm a pharmaceutical rep. I sell parts to back surgeons, and these are my friends. My very best friend actually is a teacher. He is a surgeon who teaches back surgery techniques out of New York City. And I'm going to his house tomorrow for dinner. Do you have your MRI? Because I want to take it with me, and I want him to see what's going on here. Like, oh my God, I do. I have my MRI. He goes up and he sees this guy and he shows it to him. And the surgeon said, Stephanie, no. No titanium rods. No baskets. That is not what needs to go on here. He said, but she needs surgery emergently. He said, she has the single most extruded disc I've literally ever seen in my life. And Yak said to him, well, here's another problem. She has no insurance. He said, it doesn't matter. He said, there's a hospital in New Jersey in the middle of the sticks. I don't even remember the freaking name of this place. Jonestown, I don't know. He said, if she goes to this hospital in Jonestown, New Jersey, I want her to go into the emergency room and say that I've been treating her and that she's having serious pain and that she needs to see me in the ER. He said, because if we do it this way, he said, I'm going to be able to do the surgery for her as a charity case. I was like, oh my God. Okay, this is literally 24 hours after this third step. So I call my family, who's very nervous about what's going on in my life, and I tell them about it. And my brother Johnny said, Sarah, he said, you're not going to believe this. And I said, why? He said, because I gave legal counsel to that hospital. So God gives me a world-renowned surgeon, sends me to a hospital that my brother is on the board of, and I end up getting a private room because all the rooms are booked. And as a charity case, somehow, I get a private room. Now, let me tell you something. I am now being treated like Bill Gates. I am a homeless drunk, is who I am. I have no power on planet Earth. I have no insurance. I have no money. But what I have is really good sponsorship, who's directed me to God. And what I have is my other hand and my sponsees. And I'm helping God's kids. And this is the miracle that I was always told. That if you can't manage your life, it doesn't matter. Because God can. But you got to let go absolutely of everything. I had the surgery. You see, I'm fine. This is a year ago, just about to the day. After that, my good friend Patty Burke had moved down to Florida, and she's like, Sarah, don't worry about paying rent. You come down and stay with me, sister. You don't have to pay any rent. So now I get to recover in the Florida sun for 8 months. Patty and I are rolling around going, what's going on? You know, like, what's happening next? Like, we have no idea. 3 months ago, all of a sudden I started to have back problems again. I'm like, oh, my God, please. So I came up here to see the surgeon and find out what's going on. And I found out it's not neurological. It's just a mechanical problem. There's a couple of physical therapy things I can now do to start to get stronger, something I wasn't able to do when I was in Florida. But as soon as I get back up here, the weirdest thing is I start to get stronger, like immediately. And he doesn't do anything. I don't even do any physical therapy. But what I find out is that my mom, who had been in assisted living for 2 years, was having serious dementia problems, is now ready to move. She's ready to get her own place. And she now needs me to help her. It is the single biggest miracle of my life in Alcoholics Anonymous, because when I came here, my problem was God and my mother. That's what had made me insane. And I had tortured her relentlessly. I blamed everything that happened all my life for 25 years to my mom. I almost destroyed her with the guilt that I instilled in her. And now I'm able to live on a daily basis, live in the amends, and care for her, not just physically and her well-being, but spiritually. I'm able to tell her the truth. No, Mom, it wasn't your fault. I was a self-centered, delusional alcoholic, and you really did the very best that you could. And so did the Catholic Church, who I really thought, you know, and they were trying to teach me spiritual principles. But I had a lack of power. I had a lack of power. You know, I could not live up to these principles. I simply did not have the power. I had to go through these steps and unlearn a whole bunch of things and have my ego deflated at depth to have an experience of God. It's absolutely incredible. I have no idea what's going on planet Earth at any given time. Can't figure out a thing. But I know now I have a true experience of God, a true experience. Doesn't mean my head doesn't get afraid sometimes, that I don't manufacture things. I still got an ego. We are not talking about ego elimination. You know what I mean? On a daily basis, I have to either pick up the toolkit in 10, 11, you know, in 12, or turn to my sponsor. If I can't get directly to God through God dependency and the tools, I am the type of alcoholic that needs strong accountability. I am very down with accountability, and my girls know that. Because I've seen a lot of people who I really respect, but they're alcoholic, and they're afraid to, like, it's almost become a thing where, like, if you're not God-dependent, if you're using your sponsor, it's almost like taboo. It's almost like a bad thing, a weakness. And I've seen a lot of wacky things go down at Alcoholics Anonymous, including my own choices. You know, I'm not throwing any stones here, but I hold myself accountable, you know, and I stay very, very active. Now I'm in my hometown. I'm trying to bring in speakers from all over, you know, different areas. They're coming in from Philly, York, Quakertown. I just had Jeff here from this group a week or so ago. Just doing the deal, you know, but now it's different. You know what I mean? I'm not kicking ass and taking numbers. I'm not telling them all they're doing it wrong. You know, I'm more trying to just share my experience of what's happened in my life. You know, I'm bringing some of, you know, the God show, the people that are having this experience where they're finding a God who can manage their life when they let go. As a result of that, I have no obsession to drink. I can have thoughts, but I have a spiritual defense today. You know, I have God between me and that drink. And when I have the thought, I recoil from it as though from a hot flame. A completely sane reaction. It's absolutely amazing. These are not theories. These are true experiences that have happened in my life. You know, and I can't believe that a broken down, busted up, and crazy person like me, that all I was suffering from was untreated alcoholism. And that the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous has a solution to that. And that it's God. And that it's not a theory. You can actually experience it if you follow the directions to the best of your ability. I'm very grateful to all of you. Thank you for letting me share.